Love Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I'm just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to EIDR Radio. I was a little bit dumbfounded this morning when I read in one of my news feeds that the Donald rather likes the two-state solution he met with Netanyahu at the UN, and said that he was rather fond of the two-state solution. So it just begs the question, when the Muslims masquerading as Palestinians were given complete autonomy over Gaza, creating what is, in effect, two states, did that turn out to be a solution?
No. Not so far.
Look, historically, it started as a two-state solution. They took the territory of Palestine and they created Jordan and Israel from it. That's two states.
Yeah, that is also two states. Was that a solution?
Not so far.
Yeah, didn't work.
No, okay, let me ask you another thing. When Israel, the land of Israel, misnamed Palestine, was controlled entirely by Muslims, was anybody calling for a two-state solution?
No.
It's astonishing to me that if you didn't need a two-state solution, when the territory that is now Israel was controlled entirely by Arab Muslims, and you didn't need a two-state solution, then why do you need a two-state solution now?
You don't. And you won't get one.
What do you think?
Well, you get it temporarily.
Totally critical for people to suggest such a thing. And that the Muslims have been appeased in any way given concessions by Israel. When they have been given such concessions,
they're emboldened by every concession.
Yeah, did they show a right, or did they violate every condition that they had agreed to honor?
Yeah. Same example Muhammad set for them.
Yeah, strikes me that it's rather stupid.
Half an hour.
That the media can report that the leaders of the PLO are saying that they can't even negotiate with the United States until the United States removes its embassy from Jerusalem, declares that Jerusalem belongs to the godforsaken mythical people masquerading as Palestinians. The country afforded to the mythical people masquerading as Palestinians has to be drawn based upon 1967 borders. You know, the Trumpster of all people ought to know that in a real estate transaction, and this is a real estate transaction, that if you offer countered that eliminates any prior agreement. If an offer is made and it is accepted, then both parties are bound. If an offer is made and it is countered, then the only party that is bound is the party offering the counter. But it does not need to be accepted by the original party. So when Israel, was given their country back, if the 1967 borders were acceptable to the goddamn mythical people, Palestinians, why did they fight not one but three wars with Israel to take them? Would you call that a true war?
Yeah.
So because they lost both of the initial war and in the third war, they lost the initial war in 1948. They lost the war in 1967. They lost the Yom Kippur surprise attack war in 1974. Because they lost all three wars with their counter, well, we want the original offer. That's the way real estate transaction works. I mean, that would be worse than saying, all right, the Mexicans think that they are entitled to Mexico and Arizona and California and everything because, well, those were the original borders. And that the American aggression there should be reversed. So let's give Texas and New Mexico and Arizona and California back to Mexicans. Now let's give all of the American peoples
back to the Native Americans.
Right. This is so unbelievably stupid. And to attach the word solution to something that is so obviously going to make the situation worse, just as Gaza did, just as selling up the PLO and giving them in charge of the West Bank has done. I just hear it, I read it, and I shake my head and say, are you absolutely out of your mind? What has happened to the collective intelligence in this world? It boggles the mind that political correctness has caused people to be so unbelievably stupid. Speaking of stupid, can you imagine nominating Brett Kavanaugh for the U.S. Supreme Court and not done enough background check to know that it's not one but three women that claim that he was involved in sexual assault? Now, I want to tell you, the first woman claiming back in 30 years ago when he was in high school that he was a bad guy and pinned her to a bad boy. He should not have done that. That was a bad boy. No question. He should not have done that. But if it was that traumatic, why did she report it to the police?
Yeah.
Does he want to keep this secret for 30 years? And I'm not going to tell anybody, so there's no way him not to prove his innocence of the act. There's just something fundamentally wrong with that. Now, if he's free of it, there's another woman that claims that he and his pals got women drunk so that they could take advantage of them, then that he has a history of this. And I think there's another woman that claimed that later in life, as at college, that he sexually assaulted her. So if there's a pattern of this kind of behavior, that's an entirely different story. But this whole thing has been a circus. Just amazing. But I guess it's, the entitlement that goes along with the Washington Prep School, followed by Harvard. And just no sense of right and wrong. Academic institutions that are incapable of instilling any kind of judgment or values, character, and their students and parents sending their children to these prestigious institutions that have no character of their own, incapable of instilling character. So I am amazed. Well, this next thing explains it all. We had arrived in Chapter 11 of Volume 1 of Observations for Our Time, and what could be the first and last thing that we ever need to say. If we get out the door, let's read through the window, put it on the put it in a, out in the center square, and then that should be sufficient to tell the world the importance of the Torah. I've told here that there's a possibility that my cell phone is cutting out, and if it is, I will. Yeah, let me see what I'm actually now working on it as if from a headset, and if it's not working, we'll try a different technique. But this is how it's with prophetic revelation. Ma chazon. Ain is negation. Chazon is prophetic revelation. Without communicating with God, without prophecy, without a covenant agreement, establishing the relationship from chazah, without seeing and perceiving, without understanding, wicked people take charge and become unrestrained, leading the unaware to their death because they lack the ability to respond rationally. Para. Individuals act as leaders.
That sums up for that society today perfectly.
It does, doesn't it? Without the prophetic revelation in the Torah, the prophets and the Psalms, without that, then universally we see the same thing no matter when we look or where we look.
Mm-hmm.
And that individuals who are wicked, who are self-serving, who are dishonest, who are fraudulent, they take charge. They become unrestrained. Boy, just look at the last election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Talk about the wicked and unrestrained. That the wicked and unrestrained leave the unaware the consequence of political correctness to their death. Not physical death, although many are led to their physical death because of the reprehensible wars that are fought, because of things like the stupidity of the war on drugs, the stupidity of the war on terror, the stupidity of our justice system, the arrogance of our police. People take charge and they lead them to the end and the unaware to their death. But this we're talking about is the soul dying, the soul being extinguished, because they lack the ability to respond rationally. That's our world.
Yeah.
That's the history of humanity. Rome, that was Greece, that was Persia, that was Babylon, that was Assyria, that was Sparta, was the realm of the Incas and the Mayans. That was Japan for all of those decades, centuries. That was Imperial China. That was the Mongolian realms of Genghis and Kublai Khan. That was the empire of the Soviets in Russia. That was Nazi Germany. That is humanity, doing what humanity does. And it's the that so soon after the expulsion of Adam and Chawa from the garden, God had to reset At that point, very few people knew him, knew of his prophetic revelation, and as a result, mankind became so hideous, so violent, so destructive, God had to reset humankind to keep us from destroying ourselves. So, this is where we are. This is the problem. And if we don't do something, if someone doesn't say, you know, how many years? Jeremiah went through Yeshua, Isaiah, constantly said, I'm trying to find someone. I couldn't find anyone.
Yeah.
And so, here we are. If God can't find anyone with whom to speak through, then mankind just disintegrates into what we saw in the hideousness of Imperial Rome and then what grew out of it, the Roman Catholic Church.
Absolutely amazing, isn't it?
It really is. And it just happens over and over and over again. And there is no exception. There's no time where you could say, well, there was a beautiful period in human history when the most powerful realms, the most powerful kingdoms, the most powerful domains weren't evil, where the people that were being ruled over weren't ignorant, where the wicked weren't leading.
The only point you could point to would be, you know, Israel under, you know, the judges and under Samuel and all that. But again, you said powerful realms, so they weren't a very powerful nation at that point. They were a small group of people being led by Yahweh.
Yes, but even that doesn't fit this statement because they had prophetic revelation.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
So this is mankind without prophetic revelation. Now, I would encourage you to think, is there a period of time or a culture where you could say that without prophetic revelation from Yahweh, they were not hideously destructive and evil? And so even look at, you know, we talked about Sumer and how the city-state of Ur was so destructive, sacrificing hundreds and then thousands of little children, murdering tens of thousands of people when their king dies. And that's the place that Abraham had come from. So it's so just from the get-go, so despicable. I don't think you can name or find a notable exception.
Nowhere in human history. It ain't there.
Some people might say, they romanticized the colonists in America and the Puritans, and they came for their religious freedom. And, you know, they bled and sacrificed for a toehold in this land just because they wanted freedom. Oh, come on. They were savages. They were vastly more vile than the native peoples that were here. They were murderous. If you read what they wrote, if you read what they did, they were revolting.
The only reason we think of them as good is because history is written by the winners.
Correct. But they were savages. I mean, I remember going through America's 101 wars from the first colonialists, and what they wrote about their make-believe God authorizing the mass murder of savages. Reprehensible. Now, Trump says, make America great again. I'm sorry, it has not been great.
When were we ever great?
Oh, we're despicable. What we did in World War I to our own men and women, invading Europe on a lie, allowing them to be so massacred.
And anthrax, too.
For financial interests. And then you think of the Spanish flu, which was really an anthrax distribution at the hands of Woodrow Wilson, and how many and over 100 million people died.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the stupidity of the way that we prosecuted World War II and how America actually prevailed only because we became a terrorist nation, just as we did in the Civil War. Nothing.
And the Indian Wars, thank God, Sherman.
Yeah, right. Look at the what we did to the Seminoles, the Sioux.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Creeks were the largest.
Not a pretty picture.
I was going to say, you know, the Creeks were the largest Indian tribe in Alabama. They were mound builders and very civilized, and they wiped them out. You know about the Trail of Tears that went all the way to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
They just killed all the Creeks, and the Cherokee, the Choctaw, some of those made it across.
Yeah.
But, a whole genocide on the Creeks.
Yeah, America has decided, this myth that America has had manifest destiny and has been blessed by the hand of God. No, our history is despicable. We fought a war every 4 years. And you look at how unbelievably counterproductive America's invasion of Korea, America's invasion of Vietnam, America's invasion of Afghanistan, America's invasion of Iraq, America's invasion of Syria, America trying to control Yemen, and America trying to control Somalia. Just over and over and over again. The damage that America has done to Central and South America because of its alleged war on drugs. And Americans ought to have been smart enough to say, all right, so there were a lot of rumors and a lot of proof that the CIA was financed to a significant degree by the drug running it did during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, you know, maybe that's a little bit in the shadows and the like. So before America invaded Afghanistan, do you have any idea what percentage of the world's heroin production, poppy production to make heroin, was allowed under the Taliban in Afghanistan?
Zero, probably.
Zero?
Really close to zero. Do you know that after America invaded Afghanistan and the CIA became really the controlling agency in Afghanistan, do you know what percentage of the world's heroin now comes from?
90%.
90%. The only exchange is the American CIA is not only involved, but in charge of the country.
Let me give you another one. When we were kicked out of China, the drug running from the CIA moved to Laos. There's secret war right next to Vietnam that no one likes to talk about.
Right. Right.
If you check the records, you'll find that not only did it become the drug capital of the world, it also was importing, it was self-sufficient in rice and food for its people. And during the middle of the Vietnam War, they had to import millions and millions of tons of rice from the outside world in order to feed the people because they took over all their land to grow dope.
Right.
That's Army records.
Under the CIA involvement.
Yeah, CIA.
Flying Tigers. Just our Air America later on.
Mm-hmm.
South America.
Yeah.
You look at the history of Prohibition and how the highest ranking and most influential both politicians and corporate cronies became fabulously rich because they prohibited ordinary people from being able to supply alcohol so that only the most treacherous and evil, those political clout,
mm-hmm.
could profit from it. You look at what happened with the invasion of Afghanistan, and not only are the deaths from Afghanistan and Iraq catastrophically high because of the suicide, you can do the math, and it's over a quarter of a million American vets have taken their own lives, so that the actual death toll from Afghanistan and Iraq is actually 4 times greater than Vietnam because of the suicide rates of sending men into a mission where they're told they are liberating a people when they're over there, and the very people they're told they're liberating and serving are the ones trying to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the death toll has been astronomical, but you then look at the drugs that those men were exposed to, and women, and how so many of them now are being treated with opiate-based drugs to deaden their senses because they claim to have post-traumatic stress syndrome. Or that you're now dealing with an America where heroin, prior to the invasion of Afghanistan, was a rounding error in the type of drugs that were lethal. It was everything other than heroin. It had become passe that was killing Americans in large numbers. So now it's the most lethal. The only thing that changed is what we did in Afghanistan. Be really careful when somebody wants to say, oh, America, make America great again. Well, I'm sorry.
What point
you really need
to consider great?
Yes. And what was happening
before
and after and during that time? What are you willing to dismiss? What part of history are you willing to rewrite? I mean, do you want to take it to the point where the robber barons were essentially enslaving the masses? I want to say that was great because the robber barons built massive railroads, steel mills, but essentially treated the workers as slaves.
Chinese labor force, yeah, terribly.
Was that great? Or is it great now that we have this dependency state, this upside-down state where no one senses they have any responsibility, that everybody thinks they're entitled, that all you do now is redistribute wealth as if sharing it somehow creates it, dividing it, that you can create multiplication through division? Which of those two is great?
I mean, I can't stand those political... It's like, make America great. Well, great's such a subjective word to begin with. So let alone make it great again. You got to define what you think is great. If I think what you think is great is the same, it was just like Obama had, the rich need to pay their fair share. Well, yeah, I would agree. They do need to pay their fair share. What's your definition of fair? It's a great term. Yeah, fair. Everything should be fair. We want fair. But your idea of fair, my idea of fair, his idea of fair, the next guy's idea of fair are all different. Yeah, but rather than give concrete, actual answers, they throw out these platitudes that just sound great. Yeah, make America great. Yeah, let's make it great.
Yeah, well, the problem is that the top 5% of wage earners don't pay their fair share. They pay some 80% of the total. Oh, mm-hmm. They pay an unfair share.
Yeah.
To have them pay a fair share, you'd have to go back and give them enormous tax cuts, and you'd have to start taxing the remaining 90% a lot more if you wanted fair. Was America great during the period of the 1960s, the 1970s, when we had runaway inflation because the government couldn't handle its own purse and was inflating the money supply, creating money so that they could create the great society, creating the illusion of prosperity by simply inflating the money supply? Was that great?
Hardly.
But you go back, World War II certainly wasn't great. The way we lost, and you think about the stupidity of sacrificing over 300,000 American lives to avenge the death of 3,000 in Pearl Harbor. How was that great? No. How is it great that we entered World War I based on a lie and sacrificed so many lives and chemical and trench warfare for nothing? What was great about that? What was great about the lie of the Spanish-American War? All started in another lie. Vietnam War started in a lie. Gulf of Tonkin incident didn't occur. Where do you want to go? The Mexican-American War. Again, it was their country. We took it from them.
you could even remotely argue as a justified war would be the War of 1812. But even then, that was the British going, no, you're not rebellious. You know, they were just trying to take back what we took from them. So they were justified. Well, every one of the wars we fought has been that's like the only defensive war America has fought in its entire history.
Yeah, but
they had a legitimate reason.
Yeah, and even then, it wasn't the U.S. military, it was militia.
Oh, yeah, it was militias.
The U.S. military got whooped.
We had a standing military.
Right, the U.S. military got whooped, and so it was militia that were finally stopped the British advance. And, of course, at the time, two out of every three colonists living in America were actually in favor of the crown.
Yeah.
So I only share that with you because there is this propensity to think that there was this period of time in human history or that America is the great shining light on the hill, that this isn't true. And I'm telling you, there's never been a time when it wasn't true. You know, you talk about the Pax Romana. Well, the peace of Rome was only peace if you totally capitulated to them. If you allowed them to steal all of your productivity, you allowed them to steal your sons and inscript them for 20 years into the legions. If you allow them to rape your daughters. If you allow them to enslave you. It was horrid what they did. And there's probably been no more evil institution in the history of humankind than the Roman Catholic Church. And it continues to be with the molestations of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of little boys around the world. And yet, people are so stupid, the ignorant, are led to their death by these evil men. By the billions. This is the most profound statement that God could make, which is without prophetic revelation. And he's the only one that provides prophetic revelation. There's no prophecy in the Quran. Not the past, not the present, not the future. Muhammad got everything wrong.
At least not any accurate.
And prophetic. Yeah, he got everything wrong. Every prediction, every analysis of the past, his depictions of history were completely errant, and his depictions of the future were completely errant. And for prophecy to be with standards, it has to be 100% accurate. You know, Paul only attempted one prophecy, got it wrong. If there isn't prophecy that proves divine authorship, it isn't from God. That's his standard. And without his mark, his authorization, his inspiration proven by prophecy, there is no rational teaching that guides people such that it enables us to stand up against these evil influences. I mean, there isn't one person in 100,000 in America that's going to say, no, the military does not provide my freedom. No, it is not wise to be patriotic. There's not even one in 100,000 people. So, without prophetic revelation, evil and wicked individuals lead the ignorant astray and to their death. It's universally true. Not my opinion. Kirk, it's not your opinion. JB, it's not your interpretation. That's what the words say. Have you done your normal thing and looked at Ba'an Shazon, for example?
I did. And Ayan.
Good
point. Brother Ayan, it was amazing because, we translate it without, and like we were talking before the show. And the primitive root is to become a non-entity, a fatherless, to not exist. So even within these little connective words, it is so amazing that he chooses words that are indeed revealing about the overall message in the context of what he's trying to say. Prophecy was pretty easy. It's perceived what's normally not visible. And the wicked people, of course, it was interesting. It was interesting on people. He chose the word Am as opposed to Ish or Enosh or that type. And so I did my little look up on that, and you have It also means to be dim, to bind. Religion is binding or bound. People, large groups, and a location, yes. From also to be evil, dark, to grow dim, to hide something, usually hiding or twisting Yahweh's word is what comes to my mind. It's just every word in this, and it's not that many, every word in this sentence that he used was a very specific word used in this way to reveal more and more and more. So there's nothing that you have said in here and your choice of how to translate it that isn't totally relevant and isn't exact. I'm not
patting you on the back.
I mean, I know how you do it. And I'm concurring with you. I mean, I would write it the same way if I was as good a writer. You know, but it is exactly what the words mean. And what's interesting, when I started this process, I would be listening to JB and you all the time, and I would not have. Sometimes I used to say to myself, well, "Where did he get so much stuff out of these words?" And now I look at it and think to myself, some 11 years later, these other translators, how do they get so little out of these words? Did they just not open a lexicon?
Didn't they care?
Or didn't
they?
They wanted it to be as simple as possible to sell it. People don't want to deal with this issue. They have a sleeping sickness. They don't want to deal with this. They don't want to get off their couch. They don't want to have to face reality that they've been wrong. That this is wrong. That people have lied to them. I mean, I'm getting really sick of human race right at the moment. But I can be
correctly criticized for being pedantic and for loving the details, loving the words, and taking 400 words to say what could be said in 4. And yet, when I go through a statement that we've just gone through and the implications of it, my regret is that I limited it to 400 words as opposed to 4,000. Because there's so much more to say, and it's so profound, and it's all important.
Well, you know, all of us can take what you wrote, and we can look up through these various lexicons that you've advised, and there are more out there as well, and you can look through all these things, and you can have great fun by yourself sitting there not only seeing how you derived it, what your translation, but also on these words, what else is there to dig up, and you will totally be rewarded. I cover so much stuff, and we wouldn't have time to talk about it, and I'm not that good a speaker anyway, but I look at it and I just go, wow, look at there, look at that.
Yes.
And it's just the most rewarding thing, and comforting thing to know that Yahweh is just lays it all out. It's
very effective. I mean,
you can put
this language in so.
Yahweh's word, you know, and it's just there.
I was just looking up part of the word used here, and you managed to take there. 8 definitions I see for para, and you managed to incorporate pretty much every single one of them into this translation, and it all fits within the context. And that's just how amazing the words are there. That they can carry that many different meanings, and they can mean all that at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, they're not so much different meanings as they are related meanings.
Nuances, integrated meanings, and
subtle nuances.
But there are sometimes where, like, one of the connotations will fit more than another, and there are sometimes when, you know, only one really seems to fit. But in this case, every single connotation of that word fits perfectly in this sentence.
Yes. And I think it's incumbent upon us to recognize that we're not as smart as the author of these words. Yahweh is a lot smarter than we are. And so for us to edit Yahweh, to say, okay, God, there's a lot to this. Let me just dumb it down for everybody here. And I'm going to make the decision that you didn't mean to say these things, but you only meant to say this one thing. Well, I wouldn't be inaccurate, but I would certainly be pompous. I would certainly be way out of my league, and why would you do that? Why should we intervene?
If the connotation fits within the context, if the definition or the connotation that it's conveying, yeah, because a lot of these are they're really just it's the same thing, but just different connotations of the same idea. And but if it fits the context, it's incumbent on you as a translator to put it out there. Not to go, well, I think it's this one or I think it's that one. Yeah, sometimes it doesn't fit the context. There are some words where certain connotations just absolutely do not fit in the context of this sentence, so you wouldn't include it. But when every single one of them fits the context, what are you going to do? Flip a coin?
Right.
Yes. Throw a dart?
No, amplify,
no,
amplify.
No, you find a way to, you translate it with every single connotation in there.
You leave out the connotations that are in conflict with Yahweh's nature as it relates to a statement that's being made. And you encapsulate and incorporate everyone that is consistent with his nature and testimony. I think it's really simple in that regard. So then the challenge is, how do you convey all of that without confusing people because you're saying too much? So I'm going to read this again because I don't think we have too much here. I think everyone of us is capable of processing this. And so I'm going to read it again, and then we're going to go on to the second statement that's part of this Mashal Proverbs 29:18.
Mm-hmm.
Without prophetic revelation, with no communication from God, without prophecy, without a covenant agreement establishing the relationship, without seeing and perceiving, and without understanding, wicked people take charge, and they become unrestrained, leading the unaware to their death because they lack the ability to respond rationally. Individuals act as leaders over ignorant people, and those in charge take their own initiative, running wild, while the people act like an uncontrolled mob, unthinking. Their responses become universally inappropriate. But he who actually observes and genuinely focuses upon the Torah walks along the path which gives meaning to life and is blessed as a result. Now let's expand that again and then look at the corollary to no prophetic revelation, the wicked take charge, they act on their own initiative, and the masses are both ignorant and they're betrayed by their leaders, robbed of their very soul. But if we observe,
out of curiosity, I had to pull up the King James on this just to see what it said. Where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he.
Yeah.
How on earth do you come up with that? Garbage, these words.
The Hebrew word for vision, and there are many of them.
Ra'ah
is to see.
The by far the most common.
Right. Ra'ah, to see. Did Yahweh use the term Ra'ah to envision, to see, to have vision?
No.
As a matter of fact, ein, which is the Hebrew word for eye, is also used as a negation, and it's used as a negation here in this statement. But those words weren't used. The word was used here is chazon. It's prophetic revelation. Now, a lot of people have visions, it's just that none of the visions are inspired. Yeah. And they're accurate.
Look at the letters on chazon.
Yeah. So, he who actually... Now, this is what's interesting here. Because the prophetic revelation in chazon finds a parallel in that statement. This is the nature of Hebrew poetry or Hebrew prose or Hebrew communication. Is that the same thing is said, but from a different perspective, and sometimes it's a corollary. And so prophetic revelation in the first sentence is equated to what word in the second sentence?
Shamar.
observation is Shamar, and the prophetic testimony is Torah. He's saying, in essence, that the Torah is comprised of prophetic testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what he's being very clear here is that it's not about you making up laws that cause the society to function, because Torah doesn't make laws. It isn't by writing laws, or even wide-ranging guidance or instruction. It isn't by a nation creating its constitution and its laws by which people abide that there is some benefit. The verb here isn't a verb that indicates that we're doing anything in terms of creating instruction, creating guidance, and for God's sake, not creating laws. The verb here is observe. So we're talking about something that has already been given, already been written, that we can use our eyes to see. That's what Shamar means. So he who actually observes, genuinely focuses upon, he who clearly examines and carefully considers, he who uses his eyes to focus upon and his mind to ponder. This is in the call, participle. A literal interpretation of a highly descriptive verb whereby the individual becomes known and influenced by his willingness to be observant.
Well,
the Torah.
Well, not the source of
teaching, instruction, yes, direction, and guidance. So what happens, according to, this happens to be inspired by Yahweh and inscribed by his most beloved son, David. We know what now happens if there is no prophetic testimony. Evil people take charge, and the masses are left ignorant and deprived of their very souls. But if we observe, if we closely examine and carefully consider the Torah, Yahweh's teaching, his guidance, then we are Asher. My favorite word. We walk along the path which gives meaning to life and are blessed. You know, most of the time you look up you guys have mentioned lexicons, you look up in a Hebrew English lexicon, you look up Asher, and you'll see witch. Not the kind that flies on a broom, but which one of these?
Mm-hmm.
Which. Sometimes that. And then if you take a little more time and you look up the prepositional kind of nature of Asher, you'll read that Asher is a relational concept. It makes a connection between things. It associates things.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time I said, well, that's profound because, and that first time I encountered the word, it was in 2 Samuel 7, around the 11th statement, and every English translation said, when he sends, speaking of prophetic testimony about Yosha, when he sends, I will not spare the rod, punishment, the sentence for the crime. And you realize, wait a minute, he was in conflict with the Torah, then he suffered for his own failures, not for ours. And he said, wait a minute, that cannot be true. And you look up Asher and it says, wait a minute, no, Asher means when wrongdoing is associated with him, God will not spare the punishment. Well, that's exactly what happened. That's the whole concept of the Pesach sacrificial lamb. The whole concept of de-yeasting our souls with matzah, unyeasted bread. So you take one step forward, but that wasn't nearly enough. Because there's a verbal root of Asher, which is Asher itself. Asher is its own verbal root. And Asher means to walk along a narrow path, a highly restrictive path, a straight path that leads to life. And that primary definition is much more powerful in this concept than which. You study more about Asher, and it says that the essence of the word speaks of a relational benefit that is derived from stepping forward and striding in an upright manner along a correct path. It speaks of a fortuitous relationship and experiences that are derived from guidance and teaching. You look it up, and this is a word that in most lexicons appears not once or twice or three times or four times or five or six, but you know, it's like LeBron James saying how many titles he's going to win down there in South Beach. You know, it just goes on and on and on. And each time, there's another layer to it. Living a joyous and upright life, having advanced and progressed along the restrictive, right, certain, and valid, the straight way to be encouraged and to become prosperous, to be enriched and to become safe and secure. Asher is the epitome of everything Yahweh is asking of us and wants for us. He's asking us to walk along that path because that is the path that makes us secure, that leads to a joyous life, prosperous life, life everlasting. And to truncate Asher in this case, and what did the King James do with Asher in this case?
Happy is he.
Jiggy?
He said happy is he.
Happy is he is what it reads.
Happy.
If you keep it, the law.
Yes.
You'll be happy.
Well, first of all, shamar does not mean keep. There's nothing associated with the verb shamar that means to keep. To keep is to take something and hold on to it tightly, to put it in a place that you are restraining it. You're gathering something into your home or into a warehouse. You're not distributing it to anyone. You're just keeping it. That's not what shamar means. You shamar with your eyes. It means to observe. I don't know how you keep with your eyes. I guess you can keep looking, but that's not what they meant. They forgot the looking part. And it's not just looking,
another translation,
right?
But blessed is he who guards the Torah. That's a little better.
Yeah, you know, there is a derivation. It's probably the seventh or eighth derivation of shamar that can be interpreted guards. And there's a reason for that. Because if you keep focused, then you're considered to be a lookout. You know, if you're really observant, then you're the person up in that high platform looking across the walls of a fortification or an encampment, and it's your job to stay focused and to be especially observant so that you can provide an early warning should a foe or a dangerous animal or something be spotted and be prone to attack. So it's to guard only in the sense of the watch guard. Yeah, the person who's observant and watching over and watching out. But it's even that is totally dependent on the concept of being observant, of watching, of looking intently.
Let me tell us in a real old meaning. Of course, you were right on the blessing is also, in the oldest meaning I could find on that one is who walks in a straight line or a path. So that was good on Asher. But also in Shamar, it was as close watching as a safeguarding and protecting. And then they cite an example of a shepherd's constructing corrals of briars at night around to safeguard the flock, which is Yah's children. So he's always watching over it as well. So. But that's what you do. You have to watch, but you're also in a protective mode as well, because you're looking to keep everyone safe. So,
yes.
In this case,
well, there's some derivations,
but
even the derivations are extrapolations from being observant. Right?
Yeah. Everything's from being observant, yes.
Right. That's the best way to look at a lot of Hebrew is to kind of go to with the core, concrete understanding of the word, you could see how all these other connotations came from that. Yeah, I was talking about one today, and it was the word for, it's usually translated as iniquity, but it literally comes from a root that means to bend, twist, or distort. And so from that, the abstract idea of crookedness came from it. And when you look at it that way, and you understand what that base meaning meant, then you can see how it evolved and how it picked up these other connotations and these abstract ways. Exactly. If you get that observe, pay attention to, carefully, scrutinize and observe, you can see how all these other connotations grew from that. But that core concept is what you have to understand the word.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So to translate shamar as keep is wholly and completely wrong. It's just misleading, inappropriate. And, well, that's just cheap as it's inaccurate. It's implying that you're keeping laws.
Some law.
Yeah. In this case. And then to render Torah as law. Now, Yahweh is very clear. He says that Torah is based upon the Hebrew verb yara. And every important concept that Yahweh introduces in his first use of the word, he will take the time to explain what it is based upon. And he says that Torah is based on Yara. Now, here he's inferring that Torah is based upon Chazon, prophetic testimony, prophetic revelations. And truly is, that's the thing that makes it divine. But when Yara says that Yara is the basis, the actionable root of Torah, and you look up Yara, and 100% of the time that Yara is rendered, everybody knows what it means.
Yeah.
It means the source from which instruction, guidance, direction, and teaching flow.
Yeah.
Period. That's what it means. You can take guidance, direction, teaching, or instruction, and you can use all one of those or all four of them accurately. You'd use all four of them because there's a slight difference between to guide and to direct, to instruct and to teach. They're all related, but there's little subtle differences, and it fills out, fleshes out the full concept of it. But it's the source from which those things flows. So when you're dealing with Torah, it's the source from which teaching flows. It's the source from which guidance comes. Well, what that means, if you just pause and slow down for a moment, if Torah is the source from which guidance flows, what is the Torah?
It is our teacher.
Who is the teacher? Correct. Who is the source?
Yahweh.
What is the source of the Torah? Yahweh. So if it's the source from which teaching flows, it's the source from which guidance comes, the source is Yahweh. The Torah, therefore, is Yahweh based upon the verbal, actionable root of the word. Just slow down a moment and think it through, and you get something extraordinarily profound. Yahweh is saying, from me to you, I am providing guidance. Teaching is coming from me to you. Hey, Kirk, you teach art.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever found a student to be extraordinarily effective if when you're trying to share the nature of light and of shadow and of perspective, if they're talking over you the whole time when they know 1/1,000,000,000th of what you know and they are babbling away at you? Is that an effective way to learn?
Not very constructive, no, sir.
No. All right. So when all the little Nimrods out there pray without ceasing. They're babbling on to God rather than listening to Him. What do you think? How do you think that, that works? Exactly the same thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Every time you try and tell them how to do something, help them work something, they're just going, "You're so great. You're awesome. Can you do this for me?"
But isn't it amazing that that universally, every English translation, universally every religious institution has deliberately and knowingly corrupted Torah, source of teaching, to law, without any justification whatsoever. And they've all done it with a singular motive. They are those who wickedly do precisely what's here. They're the Ampara, wicked people who take charge and become unrestrained. They are the individuals who act as leaders over ignorant people and take charge on their own initiative. They make the laws. That's why they want this to say, keep the law.
And they're the cops. They're the judges. They're the enforcers.
That is correct. That is correct.
They're the ones with power granted by the law.
Right. These things are directly related. When you recognize that Yahweh is the source of the Torah teaching, and that if you observe it, you don't write it, you don't create it, you don't impose it, you simply observe it. Closely examine and carefully consider it. Then you get Asher. And if you even wanted to say, all right, let's, so many translations want to say that Asher means blessed or happy. Well, I'm here to tell you that happy and blessed, in fact, joyous and blessed, numerous words that mean just those things. You know, Barak is the Hebrew word for to bless, to kneel down in love, to lift someone up, to bless. That's Barak. Yahweh uses it all the time. Eden is one of the first words we learn about is terms of being joyous. You know, it's great joy. It's the Gan Eden, the garden of great joy. He didn't use that, did he?
No.
He used Asher. And if you've got a word that's this important that there are 7 or 8 variations of it, don't you think that it's a responsibility of someone who claims to be a translator and a scholar conveying what they would claim is the inerrant word of God to at least take a moment or two to find the basis of that word and to render it accurately and completely?
And or at least pretend that he didn't write.
He didn't write Barak.
At least present the possibilities. Don't just, you know, go with, I think it's this one, so this is the only one I'm going to give them. Yeah,
well, this is the one that the Latin Vulgate.
It's like there's 2 or 3 possibilities, and I'm like, okay, this is the one I think fits best. Here's why. Here are the other alternatives.
Right. That's fine. That's good teaching.
Yeah.
That is the way you teach.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you guide people to understand it. And realize that the reason that we have this mess of people misrepresenting what the words say is because a group of people who were so full of themselves that thought that they were smarter than everyone else and smarter than God, and yet whose Gnostic basis of real and unreal was completely and totally errant. Their religion was totally errant. Their philosophy was totally errant. Their perspective on the world was completely errant. Everything about what Aristotle and Plato teach are taught was wrong. Gnosticism is wrong. That this idea of a perfect world that is somehow imperfectly represented in the material, they just got out wrong. They were wrong, and they were full of themselves. And they're the people who translated the Hebrew into Greek. And then from the Greek, you got the most pompous, arrogant people in the history of humanity, the Romans and the Roman Catholics, who then translated the Greek into Latin. And so the basis, the first English translation, they weren't based on the Hebrew. They weren't even based on the Greek.
No.
They were based on the Latin, which was a translation, a horrible translation, by arrogant and pompous individuals.
Who then we know their motive.
Horribly translated by other pompous and arrogant individuals, misguided individuals, who were then carelessly and inappropriately translated by other careless and pompous individuals, and they came up with the first English translations, and since that time, all they have done is regurgitate the same rubbish.
And spread the disease.
Right. It's a travesty. And, you know, if you just get right down to the core of what we have done these past 20 years, guys, it's just take these words seriously. Take the time to think about them, ponder them, try to render them as accurately and completely as possible. Each time you go through them, try to improve what you've done. Try to build a basis of knowledge that leads to understanding and then to convey what you have seen with your eyes, what you're observing in these words in a manner that expands other people's understanding and leads them to the truth. That's all we've done.
That's exactly what we have read. Anything for us.
Yeah, that's all we have done.
That's all we've done.
And what has it led to? It's led to that narrow and restrictive path that leads to life, that makes life meaningful. You know, my life is taking on meaning. All of our lives is taking on meaning when we discovered what God actually said.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to a large degree, that's occurred because he's so reasonable. He's so approachable. He's so likable. So kind, generous, supportive, nurturing, caring, uplifting, liberating. He's the coolest in the universe. And he doesn't want to be worshipped. He doesn't want us to bow down to him. He doesn't want us to fear him. He's doing everything he can to say, hey, you know, don't screw this up. You can't lift me up. Don't get down on your knees. Don't worship me. That's disgusting. It's so
awkward.
Humiliating and awkward and inappropriate. Just let me get down on my knees and lift you up. That's what I want to do. That's what I can do. Good for both of us. And God is saying that here in the Torah, if you're observant of the Torah, what you're going to find is that there is a very specific path which gives meaning to life and leads to a very fortuitous relationship. We have just spent, what, a full hour.
Mm-hmm.
And in a full hour's time, we have covered, what?
One verse.
One thing.
Well, and how many words? I mean, if you really look at, take away the prepositions and the negation, so it's really chazon.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well,
you will.
Well, chazon is, because the other, let's just set aside because they're incorporated in the word, but they know that the way Hebrew does it. So, ma and an are associated with chazon, so it's really chazon that just without
modified
is ma ain, and then revelation chazon. So it's really just chazon. And then ampara, which is the wicked people take charge and become unrestrained, the ignorant astray. So chazon, para. The waz is essentially punctuation.
Punctuation.
Shamar. Yeah. Shamar, to observe. Torah, source of teaching, direction, and guidance. Asher.
Asher's in there, yeah.
Yeah. What? Five words.
Seven. Oh, really? Oh, okay. You didn't use it. Okay. I'm like,
well, if you ba'ain, let's just kind of say that yeah, ba'ain is without. And then chazon, prophetic revelation.
Not many. Not many words.
Shamar, Torah, Asher. Yeah, you're right. It's seven. Okay. Seven words. Seven words, and it not only tells you the world presents the world as it is, and all the negative associated with being patriotic, being political, being militaristic, being religious, supporting the family of man, showing allegiance to country. It only tells you all the things that are wrong about that and why they're wrong and how evil manifests itself over the ignorant, but also presents the antidote, presents the alternative that is so stunningly powerful and important. All there for us, telling us how important the Torah is. The next statement is, blessed and happy is the individual who does not walk in the defiant counsel, advice, and idolatrous scheme of the wicked and unrighteous. In the manner of those who have missed the way, he is not present and does not stand, nor in the assembly of spokesmen who deride and mock does he stray. Particular statement is likely the first statement that Dode ever penned, the first lyric that he ever sang. That's Mizmor 1:1, Psalm 1:1. Something about this, the nature of Yah's teaching. Rather than doing what we want, what religions want God to do, which is to say, believe and you will be saved. Make a profession of faith. Convert to my religion and you'll be saved. How does
give me money?
Give me money. What is the first thing that the most important person who ever lived, in terms of being inspired by Yahweh himself, what did they say? And this is one of the places where I know I get a lot of criticism because I'm so critical of government, of patriotism, of religion, politics, the human social agenda, political correctness, of the indoctrination associated with academia today. And yet, where did Dode, remember, Yahweh not only said to Dode David, he is my son and I am his father, which I want to tell you, that's all I ever want to hear God say to me or to any of us.
She is
my daughter. Yes. You're right. She is my daughter and I am her father. That works. But what he specifically said, you're right. That's what I was driving towards. What he specifically said of Dode, beyond that, is he is Tzedak. He is right. And the man who God said is right began by criticizing the human order and telling us that if you follow it, if you're subject to it, if you're swayed by it, then you're lost. No hope for you. If you pledge your allegiance to country, it's over for you. There's no chance you will ever be invited into the Yahweh's family. And so he begins where I think we have to begin. You have to let people know that they have been beguiled, that they have been misled, that God does not bless their country, that God cannot be reached through religion, that the people who claim to speak for him do not. And if you don't let them know that their military doesn't provide their freedom, but instead it exists to usurp their freedom, that the Department of Justice is unjust, that religion is wrong, if you don't begin there, then you have no hope of getting people to walk away from those things, to distance themselves those things sufficiently to be open to the testimony of God. And I think it's true for every single one of us. I was once religious. I was once political. It's not until I walked away from them that God's message and his invitation resonated. And I think it's true of all of us. It's true of all of the characters whose lives were chronicled. Look where Moshe began, Moses. In Egypt, part of the royal household. What did he do? He walked away from it, all the way to Arabia. Look at Abraham. He grew up in the most human, the most political, the most militaristic, the most religious place on earth at its time. Ur, and what became the heart of Babylon, Tsumah at the time. That's the nature of what we need to do. And so Dode begins by telling us that if we're swayed by the family of man, we're in trouble. So if you want to be on the right path, he says, blessed and happy, Asri, by walking the correct and straight path, the enjoyment of a favorable outcome and meaningful life awaits. Well, that's what Dode did. And this, by the way, Asher is a derivative of Asher, blessed and happy, by walking the correct and straight path, the enjoyment of a favorable outcome and a meaningful life awaits. The individual who does not walk, lo halak, in the defiant counsel, advice, and idolatrous scheme of the wicked and unrighteous. You can't have both. You can't be aligned to the family of man and the family of God. You choose one or the other.
And I've heard a lot of people criticize this show, and not even necessarily criticize, but critique more accurately. I mean, a lot of it were people that even liked it. But then, like other interviews, they're like, oh, I really like what he says about this and that. I just wish he didn't spend so much time bashing religion or bashing, you know, the government. Until you're convinced, you know, show someone that what they currently believe is wrong, you have no chance of convincing them of the truth. Because until they're willing to let go of the lies they believe, they'll never believe the truth. So that's why we do spend so much time pointing out, you know, especially going through the Torah, when something is completely destroying a religious idea or a government idea, we spend the time, we dwell on that because, there's a chance somebody new's come to the show and, that might be the thing that gets them to realize, hey, I'm believing this lie. And I need to stop believing this lie. They're right. This is a lie. But until you stop believing that lie, the truth does you no good.
You know, if you turn on the television and you're watching a sporting event, you turn on the television and you're watching the news, you turn on the television and you're just watching a public service commercial, they're all going to thank the military and your first responders for providing your freedom and protecting your life. It's all a lie. And it's so ubiquitous, so often repeated, comes from every possible source that it's hard for people to recognize it's a lie. And if they become dependent upon their military for their sense of well-being and security and freedom, then they're never going to turn to God for those things.
Mm-hmm. Who was protecting you when you were having tea with the terrorists? Your government?
No.
Your military?
Government made me sign it. Made me sign a piece of paper that said that
we're not responsible for your death.
We're not responsible for your death. Yes.
The backdrop of this is the one who's talking. If anybody knew more about corrupted government, he got to see it go from Samuel to Shaphat and the system that Yahweh set up, and he knew what God told Samuel to say. And all about Shaul, and he watched the whole history of Shaul, and then he took over as a shepherd, or shepherd king, if you like. And he spent so much of his time writing these psalms to guide us, inspired by Yahweh.
And
what's better than to do this? Government and military and religion.
Yeah.
He did. Yahweh wants you to.
Correct.
It's the last call. You got 10 years?
Yeah, if you're going to follow someone's example, whose example would you think would be the best to follow? You want to do the right thing. And there's a, you're going to pick a human being whose example you say, all right, that human being is right. God really dug that human being. God said, he is my kid. I'm his dad. He's right. Ooh. Whose example do you know you could follow and be right? And let's just say, okay, that's, that bothers some people, I know, because I was, you know, I've been told so many times that, you know, I'm damn near worshiping them. I'm inspired by them. I'm in awe of him. I can't wait to meet him. I just think he's brilliant. I love his lyrics. But, you know, if Iowa says, he is my songwriter, I love his lyrics, I love his song, okay, then I think it's okay for us to say the same thing. But if you didn't want to, if you didn't want to use Dode as your example on how to be, how to live a life that is right, full, beneficial, meaningful, then maybe the other example you could follow would be
Yahusha.
Well, how about just Yahusha?
Well, the thing about Yahusha
makes it a little difficult for us.
Right, we can't do what he did. We can't just kill Passover.
Right, that's right. Yahusha is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, doing things that only Yahweh can and should do. I don't have a problem up to a point. I mean, to the point that
he
observed the Torah. He prioritized and valued the Torah. He accepted and attended the Moed Mikre. He cited the Torah and the prophets to answer every question. There's a lot of things.
Well, the biggest problem with trying to follow Yahusha's example is we don't know how much of what we're told of his example we can rely on. The Greek text is so unreliable. To me, it's a fool's errand to try and follow his example. And that's just because of that.
It's muddy water on a lot of it, yeah.
Right. That's right. And being the living manifestation, a diminished manifestation of Yahweh himself, he had capabilities and responsibilities.
It won't occur in your lifetime.
Yes. Yes. And, yeah. It isn't, it's very important that we try not to replicate what he has done. Because
that'd be doing the work of the Father, which you ain't going to do.
Right, exactly. We're just not going to do that. So, and you and I and all of us can work to correctly convey what the Torah and prophets say and to make the necessary connections to understand it and then to find great joy and passion in sharing what we learn. But that's one thing. It's another thing. And Dode did that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can revel in what he has shared with us. It's another thing entirely to be the living manifestation of these words.
Yahusha existed for one very specific reason. And it wasn't to be an example for us to follow. He existed to serve as the Passover lamb. He wasn't here to be an example. He didn't tell us to follow his example.
Correct.
He was here to be the Passover lamb. That was his only job.
For Yahusha, the
man, he existed solely to be the Pesach lamb. For Yahusha, the individual represented by the soul, he existed solely to fulfill matzah. Yes. And then it was the responsibility of the set apart spirit and the soul to then become the living embodiment of the Purim, firstborn children.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, all of those things come into play, and then Shavuah being the work of the Spirit herself. It's important to recognize that Yahweh is constantly integrating this notion of man's way is wrong, my way is right. If you follow man's way, if that's what you choose, which the vast preponderance of people are going to do, then you're lost. You're never going to be part of my family. And if you follow my guidance, you will never find yourself pledging your allegiance to a human institution or being patriotic. It's one or the other. You can never, ever have both. Ever. Once again, blessed and happy, walking the correct and straight path for the enjoyment of a favorable outcome and a meaningful life, awaits the individual who does not walk in the defiant counsel and advice and idolatrous schemes of the wicked and unrighteous. Did you guys check into EPSA?
Mm-hmm.
And find that it's
design, strategy, advice, counsel, schemes, plans, and plots from Yachts.
Yes, that's the one.
Inspiring mm-hmm. feel. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. And, you know, it's important here because I sometimes it might sound like, because these are sweeping generalities, that either my interpretation of them or of Yahweh's statement, and he is speaking of all the little people in the world. And, you know, it's just unfair. They're just ignorant. They didn't know any better. Why would God have you so hostile to? He's not. Not who he's speaking about. The little people out there that were the serfs. They were those who were enslaved, those who were controlled by the religious and the political and the militaristic. Or the robber barons. Not speaking of those, they're not the schemers. They're not the plotters. They're not the ones who are advancing idolatrous schemes. No. The people he's talking about are the religious leaders. That's who he's condemning. They are the political leaders. They are those who are the leaders of the militaries. And God is saying they're revolting. Their plans, their approaches, their deliberations, their directions are revolting, and they themselves are Rasha.
Mm-hmm.
Evil and condemned. And direct opposition.
Well, if you look at Rasha also in its original meaning, or early meaning, it basically says people who are lost to those who depart from the path out of rebellion or ignorance, which he just said walk along the path, and with the negative being the Rasha, the people that are walking off the path. Now, of course, we're talking about evil, evil people as well, and those who are leading everybody else down the path. But it's interesting that, you know, he always uses the path, walk this one path. Like Yahweh said, there, wide is the path that leads to destruction, narrow is the path that leads to...
Mm-hmm. Right. He's very the path is, you know, is always singular. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, the Torah or the covenant.
Yeah. You know, it's singular, what the Hebrew words. I mean, we know what the word the path. It would be Derek, that Yoshaxis.
Right. Which is the next word, yeah.
But the when he spoke there, that, you know, the way to life, very few find, but the way to death and destruction, many find. Don't you kind of wonder what the Hebrew words were that he used for narrow and broad, many and few? And whether or not there were clues in them, as there are in the second statement that Yahweh etched in stone. He talked about how fathers mislead their children to the third and fourth generation, and that it's only one in a million. Now, he says thousands is the term he uses. Thousands receive the benefits of the covenant by being observant of the terms and conditions. And, you know, thousands amongst billions is one in a million. So he provides the quantification. I wonder if he did in the Hebrew, and you know, it was just convoluted and lost by the time it was misrepresented.
Interesting.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know what he actually said, because it's likely that he was citing the Torah. And so it's likely that he was referring to the. So it's likely that he's saying that it's one in, you know, there's thousands, which would be relatively few, that receive the benefits of the covenant by being observant, as opposed to the millions who are part of that broad and popular way that are led astray to their death and destruction.
Well, you know, a lot of that is also compounded by the fact that
literally one in a million.
Mm-hmm.
So everything we're doing,
I would
suggest
a lot of that is compounded because they left Israel.
Yeah, Israel and Yahweh.
So they have generation after generation for thousands of years.
Yeah, no, that's that is probably the reason there's really not an exception even for Yisrael and Yehuda, is because for you know, better part of now 3,000 years, count on two or three hands, four or five hands, the number of Yisraelites and Yahudim who have paid attention to, have been observant of Yahweh's Torah and have acted upon its terms and conditions to, so as to receive the benefits of the covenant. Now, I think that that number, you know, today is in the hundreds, largely because of what we're doing here. And it's going to be, I think, approaching tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even a million. But, you know, if you look at the whole chasm of time over the last 3,000 years, and there are periods of most of that time when there was zero. So having many now, by comparison, it still could still be the 1,000
and the billions.
Yes. Yeah. And overall, even with them, it's not. It wouldn't be a situation where you're dealing with the thousands amongst billions, and you're just comparing them as the subset and a subset of that subset. It's not. It's not one in a million Yahudim, Israelites. It's one in a million overall, with a vast preponderance of them towards the end, anyway, being Yisrael and Yahuda. Once again, it fits. But, you know, these last two statements are just so utterly profound. And Russia, how many times have we been over the Rosh words and Ra'ah and Russia and recognized that he's speaking of, he's, and my proclamations in my commentary, radio. I try to be very disciplined, and I will condemn religious ideas and political ideas, and I'll condemn the pontificators of those ideas, the popes and the politicians, as advocates of these horrible ideas. But it's just them as advocates of the ideas, and really try not to condemn the victims of those ideas. Now, I'm not going to condemn Muslims, but I'm going to condemn those who have promoted the religion, those who are the living embodiments of the religion. But with this term, with Russia, Yahweh is doing the same thing. He is condemning the religious leaders, the political leaders, the societal leaders, individually, not just the doctrines, not just their scheming plans, their idolatrous ways. He's condemning them as individuals. Rasha is an individual condemnation. This idea that God loves everyone, well, I beg to differ. That's not what this says. And that in the manner, Derek, the path or conduit, of those who have missed the way, he is not present and does not stand. This goes back to this idea that we ought not be pledging allegiance to the flag. We ought not be standing for God Bless America. We ought not rise to our feet and put our hand over our hearts when the national anthem, but we ought to walk out of the stance when these things occur. Made it really clear. In the presence of these things, he does not stand. Does not. That's really hard to do in today's society. I mean, look at the guys who took a knee at the national anthem in football and all the ruckus and condemnation they have received. They chose not to stand. Now, they weren't doing it for the right reasons, but they were doing the right thing. Doing the right thing for the wrong reason doesn't help them much. But look at society's response to doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does not. He is not present and does not stand. Nor in the assembly of spokespeople who deride and mock, he does not stay. Stay is a really good word there, guys, because otherwise we'd be in trouble because, JB, you wouldn't be so much, but Kirk and I and Terry Kirkwood, we'd be in real trouble because we were there, we just didn't stay.
Yeah.
I was a political guy.
I was there just in a different way. I was very, very political for a long time. I was never religious, but I was real involved in politics. Not necessarily going to, running for anything, but that was kind of more the religion I grew up with was the conservative Republican mentality.
Yeah.
The patriotic.
Yes,
no.
But you didn't stay. So was I, but I didn't stay.
I opened my eyes eventually.
Yeah, I didn't stay. And that's what is being conveyed here, is that look at Abraham. He was there. He just didn't stay. Look at Moshe. He was there. He didn't stay. What's being conveyed. Do you think that Noah was born out there in the boonies? Or do you think he was part of the community and didn't stay?
He had to be with a group somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left him. He didn't stay.
Mm-hmm.
I was born into the family of man. My father was racist. My mother was religious. I was born into a very political family. I just didn't stay there. Now, I was raised to go to church. I didn't stay there. I was raised to be patriotic. I didn't stay there. You can't stay there if you're going to move into God's house. So this gives us tremendous opportunity so that, we've all started off being corrupted by human institution. We just didn't stay. So I think that once again, you could just take either one of these two statements and think about them, understand them, translate them, ponder them, observe them, contemplate them, extrapolate what being talked about, who's being condemned, what advice we're being given, where does this lead us? Pause long enough to find your way home,
mm-hmm.
to find your way out of the corruption and into the light. You know who to trust and who not to trust.
Where to go to get the answers.
Correct. Where to go to get the answer. And we learned in that previous statement that Yahweh is that source of guidance. And he was really clear. It leads to a very narrow path that leads to a place that gives life meaning and purpose. All right, fellas, it's always fun to do this and to examine the words and see where they lead and to look at them with fresh eyes and reveal our passion for the source of this teaching. I don't think there's anything we do that's more rewarding for us, and I think beneficial for those who are willing to listen to what Yahweh has to say.
Yeah.
All right, so next week, same place, same time.
Same place, same time.
Sounds good.
Let me say one quick thing, JB. JB, I'm reading your book. I hadn't got back to you, so, but I'm getting to it. So forgive me so far, so good.
No problem.
Okay, buddy.
No, thank you. All right.
All righty, gentlemen. I have enjoyed it immensely. Thank you for being here and let me join you. I appreciate that. Take care.
Enjoy the rest of Suka.
Yeah, you too. Yo. Good night.
Bye.